Hey everybody, welcome back. This is part two of Martin and I's conversation about Jesus's statement from the cross, one of his statements from the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? We're going to be talking more about how the Gospels were put together, how the different authors decided what to include and what not to include, and how that changes the portrait of Jesus we get in each Gospel, and how those portraits kind of combine together to give us a holistic view of the kind of Savior and Messiah that Jesus is. So we hope that this is helpful to you in your understanding not only of this specific passage, but also the entirety of the Gospels. So I hope that you enjoy. Some of these details don't line up very nicely. Does that mean the Gospel writers are lying to us? Martin, is Matthew lying to me when he says, like, that the criminals insulted Jesus, but then doesn't say anything about the criminal that defended Jesus, like Luke does? Are they lying to me?
Obviously they are, Jason.
Clearly. That's it. We're both retiring.
We're done.
It's the end.
No. That's sarcasm. Please don't get me fired. But it works like this. Have you ever heard someone else tell a story that you know? And they tell it a little differently.
Never. My wife and I always tell every story the exact same way.
For those of you that don't know me, I have a little brother. He's a year younger than me. And I've told my church this story a lot of times when we talk about the image of God. When I was little, I spent hours working on this picture. I don't remember what the picture was, but I spent hours working on it. It was the best creation I could have made, right? It was perfectly balanced. I drew it with colored pencils instead of markers because I didn't want it to bleed, and instead of crayons because I didn't want the oily residue. I made the pencil outline beforehand and then used the pen to go over. I spent significant amounts of time making this picture, and I said, this is a masterpiece. I'm done. Can't change it. Can't make it better. And then my little brother comes around and he sees the picture and he says, I bet I could make this better. And he takes his crayon off or his marker out and he holds it like you would if you're stabbing someone with a knife. He takes the pen or the marker like that and he just starts drawing all over the picture. And he's a little younger than me. So this was one of those, or that point in time where he hadn't quite figured out full control of his body, right? His arm is just kind of going around. I don't know how to describe it. He's flicking his wrist, basically. But when I was drawing, I held my pencil between my fingers and I used control in my hand. And so if my brother told you the story, he would tell you about how super mad I got and how he and I were furious at each other afterwards because he was just trying to help, but he ruined something. It's a difference in perspective. See, when I talk about it, I talk about the time it took me to make this and how angry I was when he destroyed it. When my brother tells this story, which I don't even know if he remembered it, but I will never let him live it down. But when he tells this story, which I would assume how he tells this story, I don't think he remembers it, but he would talk about how he saw this picture that his brother had made and he wanted to add on to it. He wanted to be a part of it. And then his older brother got upset about it. It's the difference in perspectives because I'm seeing it from my point of view and my focus. My focus is the work that I put into it. He's seeing it from his point of view, the contribution that he makes. And so we would tell the stories completely differently. But it's the same event. And that happens throughout history all over the place because you're going to have one person recording from their point of view and one person recording from their point of view and one person recording from their point of view. And one of the stories that works out like this really well in the Gospels is the Sermon on the Mount is 2 or 3 chapters long in the Gospel of Matthew. It's this huge chunk in the Gospel of Matthew. And in the Gospel of Luke, it's like 10 verses. Why? Well, Luke's not as focused on what Jesus is talking about in this section. while Matthew is saying Jesus took this huge chunk of the Old Testament law and reinterpreted it for the people. He interpreted it in a way that it wasn't legalism and it wasn't rule following, but it was based out of compassion and out of this. You guys probably, or I know I've talked about it a little bit, and you'll probably hear me talk about it so much more if you continue listening to our podcast. But in Leviticus, when God says to the people, "Be holy as I am holy," you see that same message when Jesus is talking about the salt and the light. He says, make yourselves special from everybody else, being different from the rest of the world around you. And when you do so, be the light, so that when people see it, they want to be a part of it. And then the rest of the Sermon on the Mount can be interpreted through that. He says, no longer is just not killing each other fine. You should love each other. No longer is just not cheating on your wife okay. You shouldn't even look at another woman lustfully. You should have no desire to do anything with another woman. He says, if you are tempted to sin, because Christianity focuses a lot more on sin in our minds and on our hearts than Judaism did, he says, if you are tempted to do that, then chop that part of your life out and find a way to not interact with it. First of all, I love the Sermon on the Mount in the Gospel of Matthew so much. It's like my favorite part in the Gospel of Matthew. There's so much that goes into it that Luke doesn't even talk about. He just breezes over it. And Mark and John don't even talk about it. They skip over it entirely. And that's, again, the perspective. It's who they're trying to reach. It's who they're trying to teach. What they're trying to teach. And that's why the Gospels have kind of different emphases, different stories included. They tell them a little bit differently.
So to be clear here, we're not saying, because I 100% agree with Martin, we're not saying that, oh, Matthew was confused and forgot parts and he should have included them, but, you know, he was old and forgetful. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is when these authors are choosing whether or not to include a detail, they're selecting the details relevant to the point of the story. So, like, I have a lot of stories from like high school sports that I tell, and some are like, man, that was such a great game. We had so much fun. And some are just funny because teenagers are weird, and some are kind of sad or whatever. Right. So I have tons of stories because I did sports for a long time. If I'm telling a story that's meant to be funny, then I'm not going to, even though it's true, I'm not going to include a story about like what color car this guy drove. Right. Unless the color of the car is relevant to the punchline of the story, because the point of telling the story is to make people laugh. So I'm only going to include details that will help people to laugh, or that will engross them in the story enough that at the end, when I make the punchline, they're gonna be like, oh, that's so funny, right? So you include details for a purpose. It doesn't mean you lie to people. You include details for a purpose, and you exclude details for a purpose. And for the example of feeding the 5,000, we have like John mentions that it's close to Passover. And just a quick perusal through, I didn't do a harmony on this beforehand. I'm just looking through a parallel gospel. I don't think anyone else mentions that. But then Matthew and Luke both say that he healed the sick there, whereas Mark says that he had compassion on the crowd, and not he had compassion and healed them, but he had compassion because they were like sheep without a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. So each one of these emphases is going to be slightly different. John is already trying to remind you Jesus is going to be the Passover lamb. He's going to be the sacrifice for the sins of all people, which is an important part of his divine, not just messianic, but his messianic divine ministry. So he wants to remind you, hey, we're close to Passover. Hey, you know what's going to happen at Passover? Hey, you guys remember that thing on the cross? You remember what's going to happen there? So he's already seeding that. Whereas Luke and Matthew are, for whatever reason, wanting to emphasize the compassionate, miraculous ministry. And maybe because Luke wants to emphasize Jesus's compassion, which is a common theme for him, and Matthew wants to emphasize he is the Messiah. Look at the great works he's doing. He's healing the sick, just like we knew the Messiah would. And Mark is emphasizing this teaching element of Jesus's ministry. So different emphases, but they're including or not including details that could all be true simultaneously. He could have healed and taught, and it could have been close to Passover. None of them are lying. They're just including different details. But every once in a while, you'll run into details that just seem to be outright contradictory. And I was raised in a tradition where it was like, if there's a contradiction in the Bible, you're just not reading it right. And I think that is generally true. But when reading the Gospels, you have to remember these are not modern history books. These are a theologically dense version of Greco-Roman biographies. It is a very particular ancient genre that we don't write anymore. Because the purpose, and all credit to Mike Lycona, who is the one who at least exposed me to this. He's an amazing apologist. Go check his stuff out. In a Greco-Roman biography, you are expected to keep the main point of your story the main point and keep it true and clear. And all the minor details in the story could be excluded or overemphasized or even in very minor ways could be changed. So, for example, if someone was writing in this genre about, you know, the meeting that I have at church tonight, right? So it's 3 days from now, someone's writing about the meeting that I have at church tonight. And the meeting has, we'll say, 8 people there. And let's say that we're talking about how we're going to spend $1,000 that this ministry has been given. And there's 7 different people that speak. Well, that gets to be really complicated because you have to introduce 7 different people. What you might do if you're an ancient Greco-Roman biographer writing about my life is you'd include me because I'm the main character. And then you might take everything that all the other 6 people say or all the other 7 people say and condense it into one speaker. So like we see this with the Gadarene demoniacs, where in one account of the Gadarene demoniacs, there's one. And in another account, there's 2. Why is there only one and one? Like that, those can't both be true. And the answer is because all the words said are being condensed into one character anyway. So you just don't even have to acknowledge the existence of the other. That's weird for us. But that's how ancient writers wrote. They're not trying to lie to you. They're not trying to deceive you. They're just not giving you a detail that doesn't matter. And they're even altering minor details like who says what when to keep the point of the story clear and consistent. And so you're going to see things like in Matthew, he says that the criminals that Jesus is crucified with insult him. And then that's all he says. Mark just says that he's crucified with criminals and doesn't say that they said anything. And Luke is going to have this really long exchange where one of the criminals insults Jesus and then another one defends Jesus. And then Jesus promises that righteous criminal when he says, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. That's a confession of faith because he's basically saying, I don't know how you're getting down from this cross, but you're getting down from this cross and you're going to have a kingdom and it's going to be God's kingdom. And I want to be a part of it. That's a confession of faith. There's a lot of things he doesn't know, but that's a confession of faith. And Jesus' response is, in the throes of agony, about to die, he doesn't talk about his own pain. He doesn't speak judgment over the other criminal. He turns in compassion to that repenting criminal and says, today you are going to join me in paradise. So that's in keeping with Luke's theme. Matthew contradicts Luke from a modern perspective. But for an ancient writer, a big part of Matthew's point is alluding back to the Old Testament and trying to really drive home this idea that Jesus is the fulfillment of prophecy and he is the suffering servant of Isaiah. When he gets an opportunity to show how Jesus was mocked, which is going to continue to build on the Psalm 22 theme, and it's also going to build on this suffering servant theme that Matthew likes alluding to throughout his gospel. When he gets an opportunity to do that, he's going to do it. So he's going to say, hey, there are these criminals. The criminals mock Jesus. Okay, that's all I need because that's the point that I'm making. Is Jesus is this suffering figure, this messianic figure. Look at what he's gone through to be your savior. That's his point. So he's only going to include that. And he's even going to simplify and ignore that one righteous criminal. And moreover, there honestly might have been more than 2 criminals there. And Luke might only condense the criminals into 2 people. And say, hey, all these ones that mock Jesus, we're just going to condense them into one. And all these ones that weren't mocking Jesus, that were siding with him, we're going to condense them into one. Because that's just how you wrote ancient histories. As long as the main point was consistent and the story was broadly true, the details could be manipulated and shifted around to keep the narrative going and to keep the main point the main point. They're not trying to lie to you. They're just writing in a genre you're not used to. And once you get familiar with how they write, then it kind of frees you, because instead of trying to jerk around the things that Luke's saying and change what he's saying to make it fit with what Matthew says, you can just accept Luke for who he is and what he's trying to say to you and learn beautiful things about who Jesus is.